Hey, Jared.
Yeah, what's up, buddy?
I would love to start this podcast with you, but first, I just want to show you a few techniques.
Oh, you know,
just a few techniques, podcasting techniques. Let me just show you a few techniques, please. Just a few techniques.
All right, I guess. Fine.
Okay, now attack
me. We got to record soon, though.
Attack me with your podcast.
Oh, boy. I don't even know how to do that, but I'm going to pretend. All right, just to get this bit going, I'm going to just hit.
A few techniques.
There. How's that?
I'm just kidding. Man. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Indie Film Review, where all the techniques of podcasting are available to you at your leisure. My name is Dan, and I host this podcast along with the co-host that you hear right now, Jared.
Hi, guys. You know what you should have said? You should have said, now the podcast is going down your throat.
Because I should have said that.
That would have been a more accurate representation of the film we watched, which is, what did we watch, Dan?
We watched a movie called Entombed, 2020, directed by Chell Hamerow. I think that's how you pronounce it.
That sounds right. What is this show, Dan? I don't think we explained
it. So this is a show where we take independent features, mostly submitted by independent directors, and we watch and we review them for consumer purposes. Like, you know, all these films are things that you might never actually see, but it's up to us to get them to your ears and to your eyes, hopefully. And I feel like independent filmmakers have a lot of shit to say, and blockbusters don't. I'm just kidding. Blockbusters do, but I'd rather watch independent films, honestly.
Well, it's like, because a lot of these you wouldn't normally find unless you like listen to our show, or like that, like, and we wouldn't have normally found these films if they didn't submit them to us. So that's what I like most about the show, is I'm finding all these movies I never would have saw otherwise, because they're not in the mainstream. Because you go home, you sit down, and you're like, I'm gonna turn on Netflix, like, or like whatever, or like some of these movies that we watch on the show, they are on Amazon Prime, but they're like buried. You know, there's like, they got the algorithms where it's like,
well, and like what's unfortunate about some of these is like they're already falling victim to IMDb 5 and below. Like they're just like, don't watch this, it's shite. It's shite. Yeah. I see that word a lot. But you know, it's up to us to get the unsung heroes out there.
So like this is how I think of it. So it's like, people are saying, go support your like local restaurants or you know, your local buyers. And like, and people are really mad, like, oh, don't support Amazon, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of what we're doing, but with films.
Exactly.
We're trying to support our local filmmaker.
So this week we got a submission by our good, we can't even call him a good friend yet. He's our best friend. And he's... he submitted this film to us and we watched it. So this film is called Entombed. And so basically this film is about post-apocalyptic zombies are already here.
Don't give away the twist, Dan.
I'm not going to give away the twist. Zombies are already here. That's not a twist. Like, just the very first shot is a zombie groaning. It's okay. But like, think about Night of the Living Dead. There was no explanation to that either. Like, the zombies just came and they were. So in this, zombies are already here. And this guy, he's traveling with his daughter. His daughter ends up dying. And he...
Spoiler! No, I'm just kidding.
Not really. He finds this abandoned military base that's buried underground.
It's like a bunker, yeah.
Yeah, a bunker. And he goes in it and he's knocked out by somebody who's down there already. And he starts to get to know this kind of hermit guy who's been living down in this bunker for a year. And the hermit guy has provisions, but they're running out. And his wife is comatose and she needs sustenance. So he's going to try to get the guy who just came in. So the guy who just came in is called Seamus. And the guy who's been there is called Conrad. So Conrad is going to try to get Seamus, even though they just met, to go relinquish or to go get more provisions from... the cabin that Seamus says he passed.
Yeah.
And as the film goes on, Conrad starts to be more than what he seems.
His best friend?
Yes, best friend.
They become best friends? Yes, dude. Yeah, this is really a movie about friendship and love and, you know, nothing bad ever happens in the bunker. And they just, you know, they become entombed together.
Yes.
Through bonds.
Entombed together
friendship bonds
forever.
That does not happen. Everything goes horribly wrong, and this movie's really fucked up.
This movie's extremely fucked up. Like,
but in a good way. In a good way.
I cannot wait to talk about, like, I mean, yeah, I cannot.
There's
wait to
big spoilers in this movie, and me and Dan are going to try to dance around for sure.
Well, like, I already want to talk about the spoilers because it's impossible.
We can't yet. We can't.
So let's
Dan,
ask
we have
some
to
questions.
Do, yeah, we got to do questions. We got to do questions. All right. So, how did you feel about the camera work in this movie, Dan?
It wasn't something that drew attention to itself. It was not something that was super, you know, out of this world, but I feel like if they were doing things that were very experimental with the camera, it would have kind of taken away from the strength of the narrative and yes. the strength of the mise-en-scene of the bunker. Like, mm-hmm. it's a really creepy bunker. It's a really, you know, weird situation that these people are in, and the narrative itself is so fucked up that, like, all the attention needs to be on that specifically.
Yeah.
And the actors, because essentially this is, it turns into a little bit of a character study because you're watching these people kind of get to know each other, and then we are getting to know them through, because all we know about Seamus is he was outside, and we start mm-hmm. to get to know his personality. We start to get to know Conrad's personality through this movie.
Yeah. The film is really about Seamus and Conrad, and it's not really about zombies. Like, zombies is just like the fear and the wild unknown that is outside, and they are inside the bunker being protected. I will say this movie was made in around like 14 days or so, which I thought was pretty impressive, on with just like a $5,000 budget.
And this movie blew my mind for that budget, like how independent this is.
So
and
good.
Oh my God. It throws you for a loop. Like, the acting is fantastic. The, like I said, the narrative is fantastic. A lot of the surprises are, like, fantastic. Like, you would think the biggest surprise, I'm like, I should have seen that coming, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was...
Yeah, I mean...
This film takes you on a ride, and it's only in this bunker, which, you know, how often do those types of movies, like, hold your attention 100% all the way through, keep you on the edge of your seat? Because it's really difficult to, you know, make those films that are just set in one place work.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, this is one of those movies where it's like, you were only basically in the bunker for most of the film. There are some flashbacks and other things, but a lot of it does take place in this bunker. And I was interested the whole time.
Yeah.
I thought for a filmmaker who's only made one or two films, and for a lot of these actors, I looked them up, a lot of them have only started acting for a few years. Everyone did a really good job. I was impressed with, like, these are the types of independent films that I am looking for, that I'm trying to find. Like, these really low budget, you know, efforts where people are just like, we want to make a movie. Oh, let's do it. And they just kind of like cobble it together and just make something. And it turns out great.
Now, how did you feel
it was
about
awesome.
The sound design in this film?
Okay, so I thought the sound design was good, except for whenever they went into the wife room, the Sleeping Beauty headquarters, because of the... So I think they actually filmed in a real bunker. It seems like they really did. And to get the cameras in there and everything, I thought was really cool. Like, for what they did, it was very well done. But whenever they would go into this one little half-dome room where the wife was comatose... the volume would like echo and it would get a little weird, you know, sound.
There was
stuff.
A couple times where the volume, one of my favorite parts of the sound design is every once in a while, and it's so hard to talk about this without spoiling anything. Every once in a while you hear zombies just like through the ventilation of the bunker.
Yeah.
And it kind of echoes and reverberates throughout the whole bunker, and it's unsettling. But there's other things in this film that are equally, if not more, unsettling. And it's that with eerie music, with zombies all playing at once. And you're like, fuck, this is gross. Like, I do not want to be in this situation. But you're there with Seamus and you're like, fuck, Seamus, do something.
And Seamus is like a good-natured...
Yeah, he's a good Samaritan dude.
...guy who... He like doesn't want to hurt other people. He just wants to live peacefully. and he just wants to be sad that his, you know, daughter just died. But he keeps getting thrown in all these situations where he doesn't have time to grieve or, like, think about any of that stuff because of how dangerous the world is that he lives in. Another thing about the sound design and some of the camera work, too, is they kept doing through in between, like, these transitions of, like, slowly zooming into a pipe where, like, inside the vents or whatever in the pipes, and it would be, like, it would show that or it would show, like, the flapping tarp and stuff like that. I was like, all of that was, like, really eerie, and whenever they go to the tunnel, you know, and they'd, like, begun slowly going to the tunnel, it was very disorientating to me, seeing that, and I really, it made me feel a certain way, like, while I was watching it, because at first I was like, am I falling down? As, you know, like, is the camera going down into a thing? Like, what are we doing? And, like, well, I couldn't figure out what was happening.
I agree with you. Those moments are very Lynchian to me, at least.
Because I liked it.
Like, David Lynch has this thing about filming mundane objects, like, that have no business being filmed, but he puts eerie music over it, and, like, it gives you this sense of dread, and I felt that a lot in this film, for sure.
Well, I don't know if I'll give the director the credit of being Lynchian, but I will say that I certainly appreciated a lot of those scenes.
Well, I'm not saying, like, he was doing it on purpose. I'm just saying that, to me, like, that just reminds me of, like anytime I see the banal objects, it's very, it's very eerie and strange.
Dan,
it puts you in a good place.
What do you call when Bane from Batman wants to get boned in the butt by the Joker?
Banal.
You call it banal, baby.
Cut that out.
Did I say we're like 10 years old?
Batman.
Yeah.
Has never been traversed before.
My ass was born in the darkness. Plow me harder, Batman. Break my back with your giant peen. Yeah, peen is a pretty fun word. Anywho, wow, we're so good at reviewing movies. Dan, I'm going to ask you a question now.
Please do.
Were you okay with this film being in one location? Because I know that can be a thing for you. Okay?
Absolutely. This film really, really works in the bunker. And I think I think what it is, like I said, the story. The story in this film is just like, there's so many opportunities. Just the way Charles sets up these characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's so simple, but it's horrifying. All like the plot of this movie, once we get into the spoilers, is absolutely simple. Like there's not that much story to it, but getting through the scenes of simplicity, and I'm saying simple not as like a bad word. I'm saying it as like, it's just a very basic plot structure that, you know, not a lot of people have thought of. And it doesn't take that much to get you grossed out and upset because of how basic all of this is. It's not intricately thriller-ish. It's very, I'm not saying it's basic as in like it's stupid. I'm saying it's basic as in there's not a lot of moving parts. He doesn't have that much to work with, but it's still horrifying.
Yes, no, I totally agree with you. And what really kept me going in the movie is the investigation part of it, right? So there's the main room, and then there's like three or four other rooms. So it's like the wifey room. There's
Conrad's room.
Conrad's room. There's the weird laboratory that's locked, and you're like, what's in the creepy bunker military laboratory thing? So, and over time, he keeps investigating these things and learning new stuff. And the back and forth between Conrad and Seamus about like, we're going to go, we're going to find that cabin. And we're going to, they think there's a helicopter there that they can fix. It's called a gyrocopter. I guess it's like a smaller helicopter. They're like, we're going to get to the gyrocopter. I'm going to bring it back here. We're going to get you and your wife and we're all going to go fly to safety. It's going to be great. And they keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. But that's really not, in like those scenes don't ever happen because they even point this out. Like that's like their religion or their belief.
Yeah.
It's the hope that keeps them going. It's the idea of getting to the gyrocopter.
Well, and they also have, like, apparently there's an island not too far away from them that people have found refuge in, and they have some form of a society. But to kind of, like, start bleeding into our spoiler territory, we have to address that Seamus can't go out anywhere. The reason they keep talking about it is because when Seamus came down the thing, he hurt his leg.
Mm-hmm.
So he can't move anywhere, and Conrad's making him do the errand running. So
yeah, Conrad doesn't want to leave at all because he's a little bitch.
Let's start to spoil this movie.
Yeah, we got to spoil it. Guys, I don't know if this movie is out anywhere yet.
When it comes out, or just watch this movie, find it, look for it, tell Chell that you want to watch this movie, and we will make sure that it's distributed properly. Okay, so we learn that Mila is her name, the wife, is not really
Mila Jovovich.
No, not Mila.
Wow, Jovovich. That's a big get they got for this movie.
No, Mila is the name of the wife. And she is not really his wife. We find out this because Conrad passes out, and Seamus is just curious, and he goes into the wife room, and then she grabs him, and she's like, I'm just pretending. He's not really my husband. He's torturing me. And Seamus is like, what the fuck?
That was a great scene.
It was amazing, and I'm like, I should have seen that coming, but I didn't.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
So, okay. So before all of that, I was watching this movie. I was like, all right, okay. Okay, movie, okay. And then that scene happened, and I'm like, I'm in. This movie is so good now. I'm fucking
because
so ready for whatever's going on.
Now you're introduced, like, you're identifying with Seamus. Seamus is the protagonist, and you're navigating this whole narrative as him. And whenever you are finally confronted with the fact that this is actually a girl who's being tortured by Conrad, you're like, what do we do now?
Not just tortured.
Now, let me okay, ready? There are multiple scenes in this movie where Seamus has to just sit there idly while Conrad rapes his comatose, quote, wife.
He has to pretend to sleep. They both have to pretend to be in their roles. One would be, I'm sleeping, and the other one is, I'm in
comatose.
A coma.
Dude, that's what I'm talking, like, that one scene, there's this one incredible scene where he's, like, Conrad is on top of Mila raping her, and you just hear that in the other room, and then you hear the zombie, and then you hear the music, and it's all just like, oh, God. And he does this multiple times. Like, oh, my God.
Every night.
It's so
bad. Every fucking
night.
He gets drunk or passes out or goes and rapes Mila. It's insane. And she would rather do that than be awake around him. So think about how bad he is when she is awake.
Fucked up. Thanks,
Fuck.
Chell. Thanks.
Jesus Christ. And here's the
wonderful
real struggle. So it's like, Dan, imagine you're in this situation. Imagine you are the main character. You have really beautiful, I mean, you already have really magnificent hair, but, like, imagine you have, like, hair like his, you know, like beautiful flowing locks. And you're in this situation. What do you think you would do?
That's a hard question. I'd like to think that I would attempt to save and just end up dying because the guy's fucking combat trained for no reason.
Yeah. Cause he's like paramilitary or whatever. Yeah. So, like, in my mind, When Mila is telling the main character, you need to kill this guy because if you don't, he's going to kill both of us. And I've seen him kill many people, and he's, like, really terrible. This guy's a monster. And then the main character's like, well, I'm not a killer. Like, I don't kill people.
No,
I've never done it
kill
before.
Kill or be killed. And it's, like, really, I don't know. Like, because she asks, she's like, I want you to kill him while he's sleeping because that's the only way you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I would have the motivation at that point to do it. Like, the only time I would have the motivation to do it is whenever I see or, like, witness the act of rape happening, and I would want to protect.
Dude.
But,
and he did. He was watching that happen. We all know what our hero, like, in my hero mind, of course,
I'm
going to save the day. But in regular town, I'm probably pissing myself.
Exactly.
So like, I don't know. It's like a really insane situation. And that's what makes the movie. That's what makes it for me. That's thinking
that's,
about
that. That's what makes it like, you know, it's not a zombie movie. Yeah. It's the horror of being around this fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
That, well, let's like a little bit of the backstory for him. Like he was part of this military group that was occupying this bunker, but somehow, even though they apprehended him because he was being a dick, he ended up turning on all of them and killed the whole military operation. That's how fucking badass this guy is.
Yeah, I'm sure he like poisoned them or did something fucking shady as fuck. He a little shady bitch. Conrad makes this movie. This guy is so menacing and creepy, and when he decides to teach you some survival training techniques, you fucking run away. Dan, you have to talk about this scene right now because this is the thing we just referenced in the beginning.
So there's this
it's the best scene in the movie.
There's a point where Seamus and Mila are kind of getting comfortable because Seamus brings her food because she hasn't eaten in weeks because she's pretending to be in a coma.
Yeah.
So he starts to like kind of take her under his wing because he just lost a daughter and she reminds him of his daughter. Mm-hmm. And at one point he's like, look, I have a map and here's the island. And he brings the map out of this little locket of him and his daughter. And he accidentally leaves the locket in her room. So Conrad wakes up the next morning and finds the locket. And he's like, okay, you must have fucked my wife.
You fucked my wife?
And he gets really upset and it gets to a point where he's like, I got to know who to trust. So it's a kill or be killed world out there because it's more than just zombies. There's people out to kill you. So I'm going to teach you a couple techniques, Seamus, to, survive out there. And he's like, I really don't think I want to. He's like, no, I want to show you some techniques. And he keeps saying, I want to show you some techniques. And that's why I thought it was funny.
But well, it's the complete domination. Conrad is completely dominating Seamus and trying to show him, like, it doesn't matter what you do, I'm going to win against you. Mm-hmm. Like, I have complete control over you, over her, over everything that's going to happen. So don't even try to fuck with me.
So the way he does this is fucking, he gives Seamus a knife and he's like, try to stab me. And he's like, I really don't want to. He's like, no, you're going to stab me. And he finally gets him to try to stab him. And he just does this cool maneuver where he disarms him and pulls his arm behind his back and it hurts really bad. And he pins him to the fucking ground and he takes the knife and he puts it in his throat.
The choreography in this, it looks good.
It's in,
like, I think they did a good job.
The whole thing was crazy. And just he's up in Seamus's face with a knife in his throat, just talking to him like that.
So the entire time Conrad is telling him the different ways that he could kill him. Mm-hmm. And before that, even before we did the combat training, he was describing to him how no one beats the Chinese in torture. This is probably my favorite monologue. And he starts describing all the different ways that the Chinese used to torture people for infidelity. And I'm like, favorite. This is insane.
He said, my personal favorite, they fed him to the tigers.
Oh, and but then at the very end, to de-escalate, he's like, well, I guess the tigers are extinct now, so that's not even a possibility. And I'm like, ooh, that was so good. He's such a piece of shit. And like all these two characters do is like they have their tit for tat, you know, kind of like tension that they have, and then they drink.
I really like how Seamus plays his cards. Like, you can, like, Seamus has dealt a shitty hand the entire movie.
Yeah.
But he plays realistic. It really well.
Yeah. And it really reminded me of The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
Where you have two characters who are stuck in a lighthouse. They can't leave the island, and all they have to do is keep each other company with their farts and annoy each other and just drink and drink and drink because there's literally nothing else to do.
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I kind of like this movie better than The Lighthouse.
What? Damn, dude.
I kind of like it better than The Lighthouse.
That's a huge compliment.
It really is, but like this movie kept me on edge and it made me feel gross. Like it's a rough sit through.
Wow, dude, that's some strong words. I don't know if I could go that far, but I do like this movie.
I mean, I love Willem Dafoe. and I loved The Lighthouse, but
you love Robert Pattinson.
Yes,
you love like a sexual love, like a banal situation is what you're saying.
Yes, like a
absolutely
banal.
The love that only two men can share together.
I'm never going to be able to think of the word banal the same again. Thank you.
Well, okay. Well, here's a question for you. Do you think that Mila's legs would be working that well when they tried to escape after she said she's been pretending to be sleeping for like weeks, at least 2 weeks?
The actress did enough with her acting, like she can't walk, to make it believable. I don't really think that it took away from the film or it like was less believable because of it. So I didn't really care too much.
Honestly, I think a lot of the times, because like Seamus has a bum leg, she can't walk very well. I love the similarities between a lot of these two characters. Of them, like, it's like physical or a lot of these things that they're going through, and it's really almost like Seamus is like a little kid trapped in a broken family of like a husband who abuses the wife and son. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the weird connection that he's in. And the way that the film keeps correlating Mila to his daughter, and how Conrad has sex with Mila and then at one point says, like, I wouldn't mind having sex with your daughter because he sees the locket. Just that the triangle.
Yeah.
Yes. And I thought it was so interesting how it builds on that. And it's just, it really almost seems like this film tackles like spousal abuse and like abuse in the home more than it is a zombie movie.
So much.
And I like that so much better. I feel like I lost the initial point I was making, but it doesn't matter because I made a better point.
A good bout of analysis. Like, it's awesome. Like, this film, it tackles isolation. It tackles fear. It tackles psychopathy, like, really well.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is insane. He's frightening.
So, yeah, let's talk about the ending real quick.
Yes.
Because I know it looks like we're going a little over, but...
And we saw recommendations. But there's you got to cut out, like, a big chunk at the beginning.
I got to cut out some stuff, so... why don't you tell us the ending?
So, Conrad is about to go rape Mila again, and Seamus takes a pipe and just hits him with all of his might, just on the back, on the head, on the neck, and then finally, whenever he's on the ground, he like knocks him out cold by hitting him on the head. And he takes Mila, they take all the supplies, they go upstairs, and they start getting away.
But he forgets his locket.
I was going to say.
Like, oh, no, my locket.
Like, as soon as he turned around, I'm like, oh, don't go get your locket, you idiot. But he
fucking
has...
Fucking dummy Seamus.
He's being sentimental. He needs his locket. So he goes and gets his locket. Does he wake up at that point or no?
He does. Conrad wakes up and now has Mila at knife point. That's because... Right. Seamus had to be an idiot and get his locket. You know why he had to get that locket? His social security card's in there. He folded it up and put it in the locket. So
you can't just leave that anywhere. So he has him at knife point. Seamus gets a gun out.
And Conrad's like, I'm a fucking dick. And he's like, you're right. So he puts the gun down because he doesn't want Mila to get stabbed. And he's like, pick up the fucking gasoline. What's so good about Conrad is he is so convinced that he has complete domination over Seamus. That Seamus is still going to do what he said, which is take the gasoline and the mechanic tools, take a three-day journey to go
with
to the cabin.
With two cans of gasoline.
Fix the gyrocopter and then bring it back so that Conrad can have it. He still thinks this plan is going to work even after he's been knocked out by Seamus and he's just held Mila at knife point. He's like, pick up the gas and go do your fucking job. He's like, if you don't do it, I'm gonna kill Mila. How about that? So it's like he's delusional. He's a psycho. It's just really intense. So the two boys go up the ladder with the gasoline together. They have a scuffle. Seamus loses because he doesn't know the power of techniques. He hasn't learned the power of techniques. So Conrad is outclassing him in every way. But there's a great scene where Mila is slowly climbing up the ladder with the gun. but her legs are all messed up. So it's taking a while for her to get up there. So she, it, and it's like her really struggling. And she finally gets up there and she pulls out the gun on Conrad and shoots him right in the chest. Now, I will say there's a weird line that she that gets said here. I want to read it because I didn't understand it. It was just a strange thing with the script. Well, he says, what is this? A fucking freak show? And then Mila shoots him. And I'm like, was that a translation error? What happened? What's going on? That was like the one time in this movie I'm like, I don't get what that line meant.
Yeah. But then she shoots him.
Yep. He gets
and
then shot.
He goes down the bunker and he's still alive.
Hurts his leg.
Yeah, hurts his leg. And Mila and Seamus are starting to get away, but Mila stays back. And Seamus is like, come on, what the fuck are you doing? Because there's a walker, a zombie coming. Mm-hmm. And she's standing behind the trap door. And then she lets the walker fall into the trap door. Because Seamus, or not Seamus, but Conrad is he's a scared of zombies.
He's a scared of zombies.
So she leaves it open and multiple zombies file in. And then he gets eaten alive. And then the others go away. And
you know what I like, though, is as soon as all the zombies fell into that hole, Conrad, he has this like really famous classic line where he goes, oh, great, more wives. And then they all just, you know, like a big old Zombo orgy. And it's like a fun time and like
Zombo
nothing bad happens.
Zombo orgy.
No, he gets annihilated. You know what I'll say is zombie makeup, special effects, super good in this movie.
Yeah.
For how low budget they are.
Yeah.
They're really well done. I really liked it. It's the type of effects that I wanted from that Zombie with a Shotgun film.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did a super good job in this. And they also use shadow and lighting to really hide certain effects.
Yeah.
You know, like when they're in the woods, in the forest, mm-hmm. or whatever, it's like silhouettes of the zombies. And it just works so well.
Yeah, it's a very
such a good job.
Brilliant movie. I will say that.
So then the two characters kind of escape off into the, you know, into the darkness.
And nothing is certain. And Seamus even says that in the movie. He's like, maybe we will, maybe we won't. Either way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a better chance than being in here. And like, they keep saying that. And I think that was a really good way to wrap up the film.
Well, it's kind of, it really tugs on having hope in any situation.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you could just sit and be defeated in this bunker, or you can have some kind of hope that like have a motivation to keep going and make a better life for yourself. And I think that hits on so many different levels, you know, besides their actual situation. And I think that's a real credit to the writing and everything that's going on. I really like that theme in the film of like the words I just said. you get what I'm trying to say, though, right?
I get it. Yeah.
All right.
So we don't have enough time for recommendations this week because we are going really long. So we're just going to wrap up. Final thoughts, Jared. I love this movie. I want people to go see it for sure. It was a fantastic thriller. It hits in all the right spots.
It's a great indie film. This is the exact type of independent film that I am looking for.
Yeah.
Of this quality.
Yeah. This
it's
caliber.
Really great. The caliber. All you need is like, I mean, you can make a good film on a couple $100s, but if you have the money, you know, $3,000, $5,000, boom, you can make a great film.
Yeah.
Just got to get those actors. You can do it.
People can find us on Twitter at Indie Film Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod, where we will post stills from this film. You can email us with your movies at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. And Jared, why don't you tell us about the Necroponicon Network?
Necroponicon Network is where Dan and I are hosted. Anyways, it's a really great site that has a bunch of podcasts on it that are all just as good, if not better, usually better than ours. there's so many different types of podcasts on there that I think you'll enjoy. So go to the necropodicon.com. You can find the list of all the different podcasts there, and you can go read our bios and kind of see what each podcast is about and whatever, whatever. You can also click on a link there to join the Discord and come talk with us. And we have a fun old time over there, and we talk about podcasts and, you know, cat memes and stuff. It's great. You'll love it.
Cat memes.
You're going to like the way you look.
We're going to love the way your Necropodicon
That's the Necropodicon slogan, actually. No. It's we're growing and we're showing. That's the Necropodicon.
That's what it is. We keep forgetting.
I just hear Paul screaming. He's listening to this. He's like, God damn those indie film review boys. They're ruining everything. all right. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. You know, I think about you all the time, and I hope you're doing good. And Dan, you got the final word.
If I am ever comatose, Jared, and Bane is baneling me, you don't have to fight him because he's Bane.
You don't have to stop him. Jesus. I know, it's a part of the role play. yeah.
Hey, I'm Brad, and if you like D&D and fantasy stories with lots of magic, adventure, strange beasts, and oddball characters, and comedians with New Zealand accents, then oh boy, have I got just the show for you. The Fate of Isen is a podcast that has, wait for it, all of those things. Remember those things I mentioned? It's got all of them! Now go listen to The Fate of Isen because it's good and you deserve good things. Fate of Isen, a proud member of the Necropodicon Network.
Necropodicon. Hard to pronounce? Easy to listen.